journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter. Yay. With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
So, for the first time in the history of podcasting, two Bonnaroo podcasts have come together to make history on the streets of Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm Brad Steiner, that's Barry Corder, that's the real Roo Bus. Now, you might not be a... how does a bus talk?
How does the actual bus speak?
I speak on its behalf.
Okay. That's right. Even when it breaks down, it's... Are you crying on the side of the road, too?
I mean, are you suggesting that we're, like, spiritually connected?
You might be. With the bus, that would be amazing if you're spiritually connected with the bus. That would be amazing.
Now that you mention that, I kind of wonder if it's like one of those Pixar cars, like if it can talk.
Oh, my God, that'd be amazing. If it could, what would it actually sound like? What would the bus's voice be like? Would it be like Randy Newman singing a song, or?
I imagine maybe like George Carlin in the Cars movies.
Really? George Carlin.
Like an old hippie?
Like Barry.
Maybe.
It's sort of like Barry.
Yes, Barry, you're now the official voice of the bus.
Fair enough. I can do that. We can record it. Come up, when it pulls up, be my voice.
Record me some phrases so I can use it like one of those old GPSs. Or
oh,
Alexa.
My God, when you honk the horn, it's just Barry complaining about his back hurting.
Yeah.
It's like every old
get
man.
Get off.
Get off
well,
my
it is
lawn.
A 30-year-old bus, so that would make sense.
Too many of
Jesus. This is pretty exciting. And Daniel and the whole family, the whole gaggle of Roo Bus patrons have joined us in Chattanooga for a podcast. Now, go around the whole thing. Did you bring your whole camp with you? What happened here?
This is... almost everybody. We have a few tag-alongs every year, but this is the core Roo Bus crew. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
I'm Brooklyn.
Look at the... All right, it's Brooklyn. All right.
I'm Sharla.
All right.
I'm Chelsea.
Wow. You have much more like a... Hashtag me too is all I say. There's way more females with you guys than ever in our campsite.
it's a prettier group than we're used to.
Wait, who are you? Group. What is that voice?
And out of
nowhere. I'm just some guy. Don't
okay, there's
it.
Some yeah, guy.
Some guy just showed up.
Yeah, I just showed up.
All right, welcome. Also from Camp Nut Butters, Brian Stone at the Stone on Air podcast. Yes. If you haven't noticed, he...
Most listened to podcast in the history of
the world. In the history of podcasting, yeah.
That's right.
Now, Daniel, where are you guys from?
We are all in Huntsville, Alabama. Okay. Actually, just a little outside in Madison, Alabama, if anybody knows where that is.
And you guys are in Huntsville too, right?
Yeah, I'm in Huntsville.
Everybody's from Huntsville.
I think it's funny you feel the need to clarify that.
Well, if anybody's from our area, they would know what I'm talking about. I mean, if you want to get really specific, we're near Harvest, Alabama.
How far outside that?
Outside of Huntsville, we're about a 20-minute, half-hour drive.
That's nothing. All right. What kind of gas mileage does that bus get?
Actually, for the size that thing is, it's not bad. If I was to calculate it out, I think it would cost me maybe $60 to get to Manchester and back from Huntsville.
No kidding. What's the drive from there to Manchester? How long is it?
Well, in a regular car, about an hour and a half. In the Roo Bus,
about a day. Day and a half.
Yeah.
Start on Monday.
I was going to say about 9.5 miles of the gallon, maybe.
So, as has been chronicled, last year we had a little bit of an issue with it.
Oh, yeah, you almost didn't make it last
year. Oh, we made it. It took a very long time, but we made it.
Like 9 hours?
Yeah. If it was running great, we could make it probably two and a half hours. Thankfully, though, knock on wood, there's some wood. It's running a little bit better now. I'm going to get a look taken at it after Christmas just to make sure, but I think we're good.
Lucky for you, we've got a bus expert with... at Russ with the bus here with his Volkswagen bus right behind us. He's actually a bus expert. He's literally been keeping this 76 Volkswagen Westfalia on the air, or on the air. I'm on the air. On the road for how long have you had it, Russ?
20 years.
Oh, Jesus.
Is it a diesel?
It's a
it's not. Okay, ours is. Big difference.
Boom.
So this is our bus. You brought your bus. You literally brought your bus with you. You brought pieces of your bus with you.
So we have a little miniature Hot Wheels version of the bus that our good friend Cassandra gave us for Christmas last year. I'll take it if we can't take the whole thing. And I brought the dashboard of the bus, kind of, that's got our handprints on it. And in the same color paint as the rest of the bus. And
now, whose hands are on what part of the bus is this? This is a giant, just like a generic piece of the bus?
Yeah, so that
you're just ripping things off of the bus and bringing it with you everywhere you go?
It's only two screws, man. I took that off this morning. That sits kind of below the the wheel, uh-huh. and it kind of muffles the engine that pokes out in the back, so okay. we don't have that, you know, breaking our eardrums.
Wow. And so you basically just take the bus around and just get people to sign it, essentially, right?
Well, there's no way I could have driven it around in downtown Chattanooga, so that's the way I'm bringing it here. I literally have nightmares about that sometimes. I'm not exaggerating.
Driving
I'll have a bad dream where I'm driving the bus in the city, and I'm, like, just freezing up with fear.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it that hard to drive? Oh, my God, Kanye West just started. Kanye just started.
Jesus is king.
Yeah. one of those party beer things.
So what we're doing, we are literally outside at a hotel in Chattanooga called the Moxie, hashtag at the Moxie, in downtown Chattanooga, literally recreating Camp Nut Butter. We recreated our campsite. And by the way, this is essentially what we would bring to Camp Nut Butter. We try to bring as much any couches and podcasting equipment, our giant Bonnaroo heads on a stick, our giant marquee, a very disheveled, broken-down piece of our marquee. Yep. But this is what you get when you get a Camp Nut Butter with also, you know,
got
800 square feet of carpeting.
Mailbox.
Oh, yeah, the
mailbox. New edition last year.
Has anyone brought anything to the mailbox?
I don't think so.
Check it, please. See if we got anything. If we get drugs again, I'm reporting them to the cops.
But, you know, last year we got, suckers and a cigarette. We got one cigarette.
Yeah.
A lot of jewelry. We got stickers.
Rubus be the first entry into the mailbox for, I guess, the 2020 season? Will you be the first entry into the mailbox? You put something in the mailbox for us.
Absolutely. I got some stickers for you and some other random things, maybe.
No, you go on your podcast, you basically, you talk Bonnaroo, but you do it in a story time fashion, right? You basically tell stories on about your Bonnaroo experiences.
Yeah, so I wanted to leave the news and such to the professionals, the two guys that are sitting in front of me.
Oh, gosh, that's very loose way to use the word professional.
I come down here and there's like a whole like outdoor studio. We're basically using an old microphone from the Rock Band video games on my back porch. That's it, I promise. One of these days, maybe I'll get professional. But yeah, I have to give credit to Sharla. Let's get her on the mic here in a minute. It was her idea. She came to me a couple of months ago, and she said one of her favorite aspects of Bonnaroo was all the crazy stories, the things that kind of crop up and people retell year after year. And she thought it would be a good idea to kind of chronicle it. So I'm like, oh, let's do it in a podcast. So really, I mean, I know I do a lot of the talking, but it was her baby. What, you want to tell us about
really?
It?
Really? So
Jane's her nickname, by the way.
I'm sure it was because of a story that you always tell, because I think everybody at camp, especially at Bonnaroo, has the story that they tell, and it's the one they always come back to every year. It's sort of like when Dad reads the Bible verse at Christmas.
When I sang into the beer bottle during the Red Hot Chili Peppers, that
you know, Brian, I
that
know you
Barry
want,
told me about.
Brian, yes. I know you want my first story to be about you, but it's not.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yes, I can still see that image though, Brian.
Well, I'm absolutely a storyteller at heart, and I know all the good stories come out of Bonnaroo, and everybody has their Bonnaroo story, and everybody has their story about how they got started at Bonnaroo. And not only that, but just year after year, there's all the good stories of Bonnaroo. You know, it's I saw this awesome band, and here's my story about the pit at Bonnaroo. But not only that, here's my story about what happened at my camp at Bonnaroo. Here's my funny story of how I set up my camp at Bonnaroo.
But is it about camp or is it about an artist?
It's both.
Okay.
It's absolutely both. It's, you know, here's my funny story about when I stood in line for 6 hours to see my favorite artist. Here's my funny story about when I was in line for 27 hours and I got rerouted to the Hillsboro exit.
That's not an exaggeration.
You know, it's really not an exaggeration. So everybody's got their Bonnaroo story. Everybody's got their Bonnaroo stories. Right. So, you know, I thought it would be a great idea to have people write in, have people tell on their social media, have people email us their Bonnaroo stories, and we could retell those on our podcast. And it's really never ending because year after year, people just have dozens, hundreds, thousands of their Bonnaroo stories.
Right.
And it just goes on and on and on, and we could retell those on our podcast. So that was my idea. And, you know, last year, Daniel honestly took a lot of flack for starting Bonnaroo Rumors of Artists. And I didn't want to do that this year. So I really wanted to take a different approach of what the Rubus social media was. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to be more that community effort, more that community-focused goal. So I really want to bring together people with their stories and their Bonnaroo community experience. Yeah. So I thought, what a great way to do this, by bringing together people with their Bonnaroo stories again. So that was kind of my idea for the podcast.
Why did you get flack about lineup stuff? When did that happen? What happened?
I will be totally transparent.
Okay.
Just by nature of having a big friendly blue bus and you know, making sure that we're friends with all the rest of the community. Yeah. Like, people come up to us sometimes. It's like, hey, bro, I heard that so-and-so is playing next year. So, like, I had two people tell me last year on good faith that the Foo Fighters were going to play. It turns out that connections got crossed or whatever. And the Foo Fighters were playing a very close festival, but it was Pilgrimage, not Bonnaroo. So I'm like, yeah, you know, I love playing that game. Like, oh, who's playing next year?
Yeah, you got one of those emails that I get. They'll be in Tennessee sometime in the summer.
Yeah.
Sure.
I did get good faith information that Phish was playing, like, October of the year before last. That was cool. That turned out to be accurate. The Foo Fighters, not so much. Yeah. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not playing this game anymore. The fun thing to me is, like, the community stuff.
Well, see, that's exactly what Barry and I talk about forever and ever and ever. And you guys know this, too, because you've been around for so long. And, of course, you know, if you've been to Bonnaroo before, it has nothing really to do with the lineup. It's fun. And right about now is when we enjoy the lineup talk the most. But it really has nothing to do with the lineup.
Well, let me jump in, because when you were talking, the fact that we are here in November talking about Bonnaroo is the thing that sort of stands out to me, that it's become this almost year-round thing. You know, when we started talking about doing our podcast, we thought we would do it, what, for the 3 months leading up to it?
Yeah, I actually told Barry, I said, I hope nobody listens to this.
Yeah, and we thought, you know, Sunday when it ends, we'll maybe do a Monday the day after, and then that's it. You know, shut it down till, the lineup the next year. And we've done, I mean, it's almost year-round. We haven't done so many this year after, but people like you, Bonnaroobian, Bonnarooster, I mean, it's this year-round thing now, right?
I promise you that there isn't anybody doing a Coachella podcast right now.
Well, we thought about it. They yelled at us. They didn't want us to do that.
Yeah.
We've tried to incorporate other festivals. They get very, very touchy because the second that you say, yeah, well, it's a Bonnaroo podcast and we talk about other stuff, but we'd like you to not talk about Bonnaroo or call it a Bonnaroo podcast or we want you to change the name. By the way, look at these guys. Welcome back, guys. Look at these guys. So clean. You guys look so strange when you're showered and adorable. Now now remind me, is the beer, we met them at the beer exchange, right?
Beer exchange, which was massive. What a great time
I
was.
I was stunned as to how good that beer exchange was.
Yeah,
that
was really cool.
Now, what pod is that in? It's in 7?
I don't know what pod it is. I don't know.
It's the changes every year, right?
Kevin from Camp Redaroo, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Hey, guys, what's up?
Hi.
I feel a lot cleaner since the last time I seen you guys.
It's strange.
Yeah, we were
strange.
That was a great time, though.
Yeah, it's a great time. And
I'll tell you how dirty we were. Barry's hair wasn't gray.
That's right. It was a sort of sandy, dusty color.
You know, it's funny because we were looking over some of the pictures on the way over here from our podcast. And, you know, we were in that tent and it's all sweaty and dirty. And then, you know, you're like, oh, we're going to go meet up with the family. And, you know, we see a little bit of each other throughout the years and stuff like that through, you know, during the Bonnaroo off season. And when you see each other, like, your first reaction is always that. It's like, wow, you're so much cleaner now. Like, but, yeah, it was,
you know,
fun to see those pictures.
It's interesting when you say first reaction. When I see a Bonnaroo person, a Bonnaroofian in the wild outside of Bonnaroo, the first thing I say, it just gives me a big smile and I just want to hug somebody. Because no other time in my life do I really like anyone. But when I see a Bonnaroo person, I'm like, oh, just come here.
Yeah.
Just come here.
Yeah, you know, like, I think we talked about this a little bit last time during our podcast. But, you know, the uniqueness about Camp Redaroo and our family that we have is we're so spread out through the U.S. that a lot of us travel throughout the year to visit each other. We've spent, like, Friendsgiving together.
No
Mitchell
kidding.
Usually throws a big birthday bash that we go
now,
to
when
in Atlanta.
You met Mitch, though, you guys had known each other before, though.
No, we didn't know each other before.
No shit. No. So you guys met through Bonnaroo.
Yeah, so funny enough, how I came to Bonnaroo was through a Camp Redaroo member who was a part of the original 2012, and we went to high school together. And so I went in 2015 was my first year, and then, you know, you just instantly click. And I met Mitchell that first year, and I think we went to his birthday party that October. And then, you know, we've almost been inseparable. We see each other literally year by year. I moved out to Salt Lake City and was out there with – I actually moved to Salt Lake City for a group of individuals that are part of Camp Rhetoric. Like, I picked that city. My work gave me the opportunity to go to Salt Lake City or Colorado, and I picked Salt Lake City because I knew people in that city.
Wow.
So it really does become a big part of our lives.
That's amazing. Kyle – your friend Kyle moved to, what, Murfreesboro? I listened to your podcast the other day.
Kyle is a good buddy. He runs the Twitter account Bonaruvian, and he is the kindest, like, gentlest soul that you'll ever meet. I'm sorry, I don't work in radio. He's the kindest soul that you'll ever meet.
You got to eat it, man.
No, you're good, man. You're good. Go, go, go.
He embodies the spirit of, like, the Bonaruvian code. He is always, like, kind and, like, just generally wants to hang out or whatever. And he has done a good job to kind of keep the spirit of the community going year round.
Yeah, that's why he's one of those guys. I mean, he's all in. Yeah. I mean, to the point of moving. He was from what, New Jersey?
I think so.
And moved he's at Murfreesboro now. He's in school. But
wait, did he move to Murfreesboro for Bonnaroo?
In part.
Yeah. Stop it.
That's what he said.
Wow.
Yeah. Dude is a class act.
I could have rented him a room at my house if he needed it. He didn't have to do all that.
He just loves it.
Give you so many people like that that embody the community spirit year round. Like one of our good buddies is Ron, the guy that's kind of the brainchild of the Roo Shoot. Celia, who is over Roo Fitness. There's so many people that kind of have their area for like their specialty area of Bonnaroo, right? And we were talking a little bit before we started recording. Every year we joke around about who's headlining next year, but honestly, it's just a soundtrack to a great weekend with my good friends that I see once or twice a year.
Hey, Daniel, can I ask you? I'm sorry to interrupt. You brought up Roo Shoot. I am so fascinated by this Roo Shoot and how they coordinate this every year and get this massive whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, because they don't just do it at Bonnaroo. They do it at other places.
Yeah, they take it all the way. How do they coordinate doing this and getting this inside the grounds and do everybody gets underneath and it's
Yeah.
Is that a whole other podcast in itself, maybe?
Yes. Either us or you guys should have them on to
tell
their story.
Can you do it in two sentences real quick?
I don't want to speak for them, but basically they had some run-ins with security this past year.
Shocking news. A massive parachute in there.
I just like wearing a giant cape.
Yeah, I'm just happy to see you.
Really, you should have them on, or I should get him on. They have kind of transitioned to being the parachute people because they're going to so many different festivals, and they do such a wonderful job to spread like positive messages about mental health awareness.
Oh, no, and nothing that I could have ever said was anything other than a positive message, what they're doing. I just don't know how they get that damn thing in the Centeroo every year.
Talk to them.
And I love it.
It's not easy, I hear.
Sorry to take over your show.
You know, there was this moment when in my life when I would buy anything that I saw that was really clever on TV, and I bought this thing where, like, that wrapped around my body and eventually was, like, this pouch that you filled with beer, and they called it the beer belly. And you basically just walked around, you just looked like a big fat guy, but yet you had sloshing around beer in your stomach, right? And it had a tube that you could suck the beer out of. That's essentially how they get the shoot in. They just shove it into their stomach and they just act like a big fat guy.
Where are you going with this, Brad?
I'm sure where that was going.
Well, I don't want to stick it down my pants, but I guess.
For ladies, I've seen that there's a bra that does that nowadays.
Really?
You can smuggle in your liquor.
They have bracelets.
Nice.
Yeah, they have bracelets that you can put.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's a wine bracelet? Now Mitch says there's a wine bracelet. What is that?
It's literally jewelry.
It's just jewelry that washes. And then you fill it with wine. And
sweet hooch.
I dated her once.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that's a good band name.
Yeah, you did not date her once. Let's be honest. All right. So, we've talked about Bonnaroo. And how your podcast, but can we talk about specifically, since I've got a group of Bonnaroo people who are probably very well into the Bonnaroo culture and conversation that's happening right now. And since this podcast is happening in November, I really would like to address a couple of things. I want to mock schedules. Ooh. Now, there's a person here. Anybody here has actually made a mock schedule? Raise your hand. Yeah, Daniel.
Couple hands.
You guys made a mock schedule? You never made
mock schedule.
I was going to say, right. I saw the Real Rue bus mock right. schedule the other day.
Right. Now,
I kind of liked it, by the way.
All right, so tell me.
Yes, the fake one, the fake one.
Tell me how you made your mock schedule. Tell me what went into it. And then give me what you were trying to accomplish with your mock schedule.
Well, I made one that was more or less a joke that was just in support of who we all want to see at some point, Miss Dolly.
So it was a wish list.
Well, that one. I mean, if she could play three sets, that'd be amazing.
Well, and you went by. You were using availability of artists for 2020.
Yeah,
from what I saw, right?
Yeah,
like it was like they. You knew that they were potentially available at that time, so you weren't just saying I want to see the Rolling Stones. You were saying these potential artists can be available in the summer of 2020.
Right. So,
which I think is a fun way to look at. You know, that's what we do. We speculate all year long.
I mean,
it's fun.
You can look at who AC is booking, who they have
sure.
playing. Around that time, who is not scheduled to play in Nashville, and you can kind of put two and two together. And another example is like, okay, what's a big artist that is touring that has played other festivals that hasn't played Bonnaroo recently?
Okay.
So Tame Impala is one that makes perfect sense.
Well, yeah, Tame
well,
Impala does
brand.
Make a lot of sense. So, yeah. But here's what I'd say, and before we get into what mock schedules make sense or what don't make sense, I need to implore anybody that's actually listening to this that's part of the Bonnaroo culture, if you're on Reddit or who, if you're not, it doesn't matter. If you're making mock schedules, I really think it does a disservice to Bonnaroo. I think that mock schedules are a really, really bad thing if you do not specifically say this is a wish list. And I'm saying it for a reason. Expectations get completely out of... They get blown out of the water. Expectations do not get put back onto Earth. And then when we get the lineup, it drops and we're all like, well, this sucks. Well, this person's... I thought we were having Miley into Rihanna, into the Foo Fighters, into the Rolling Stones. I thought they were all... Let me do a thing. So I did a little bit of math, and I called some people in the industries that got the numbers. I found a mock lineup on Reddit. I don't know who made it. I really don't know who made it. And I'm going to go through one day of the mock lineup, okay? I'm not going to read the whole thing that they did on a Saturday. It was a random Saturday. Rage Against the Machine, Vampire Weekend, Kid Cudi, My Chemical Romance, Lizzo, Brittany Howard, The High Women, Danny Brown, Local Natives, Perfume Genius. That's an entire festival, guys. Like, that's an entire weekend, right? Do you know how much just that day costs? $5.5 million. $5.5 million in one day. They do not have a budget for $5.5 million. And I'm going to go you one step better. If you put My Chemical Romance on a mock schedule, I want you to know that it is going to cost you $1.5 million to put My Chemical Romance on the festival lineup. What did Cardi B get last year? And what was her placement on the line, on the poster? What was she, five? Was she on the top line or the second line?
Third line, I want to say.
Okay, well, Cardi B got $400,000 last year. Do you think that they're going to sell tickets putting My Chemical Romance at $1.5 million on that lineup's top line? You think they're going to sell any tickets that way? I don't think so. So, again, these mock lineups, they're fun. They're really fun. But please, I hope there's not a human being ever taking them seriously. I hope that there is somebody saying to them, this is just for fun. This is just... Because, by the way, this mock lineup that I saw, it was great, but it also had the next day Rihanna, Dolly Parton, Tame Impala, Oysterhead, and Run the Jewels. That's another $4 million.
So I'll tell you one reason I think people do that is we're able to look at past lineups with rose-colored glasses. If you look at like 13, 14,
that is a
15,
great point, Dan.
You,
a great
you
point.
See a lot of bands that weren't as expensive back in that day, and you think like, oh, well, they can book acts like that again. No, they can't.
That's right. That's exactly,
well, that's
right.
Exactly right.
When I was looking at whoever on Reddit is posting these like snapshots back to the schedule, like Saturdays of 2012 or whatever. I mean, you can look down and see like the National on like like the Who stage.
Well,
you're,
I mean,
not getting that anymore.
That's the whole point of kind of what you and I've been talking about for a year is sort of this, the reality of this, how it works, how these festivals work, the thinking behind it. You know, we've had Jeff Cuellar on a couple of times, and he's been so insightful, sort of giving us this insight on how it actually works, you know. I mean, I think your point is right, but it is a wish list. Yeah. We all have our wish lists, and I think you hit it right on the head. We don't think about what they cost this year. you know.
It is a great point. Daniel makes a great point because in 2009, and I posted this on Twitter earlier, in 2009, we all, every one of us, I don't care how many people say that they did, they missed Adele. Adele was on the lineup in 2009, and I read the Rolling Stone article earlier today to a quote-unquote smallish crowd. No. That's heartbreaking. Oh. And if you put Adele on the lineup right now, she's going to cost you about $2.7 million.
So I'll give you a similar story, since that's kind of our deal, storytelling. We went to go see Post Malone in 2016. There wasn't much of anybody there, and it was a bad show.
He was also less a few face tattoos, by the way, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bad show because basically every hip-hop show is terrible. That's no doubt about that. I'm not kidding.
A similar story I found out just because of YouTube. We like watch Bonner videos.
Yeah.
Walk the Moon literally won a contest to show up in 2012 or 13. Like, that was they had a music video where he enlisted his grandpa, like the lead singer, and was like, "We just want to go to Bonnaroo. Help us out." And that was like they got Walk the Moon for free that year.
Yeah. There. Anybody that's on the Who stage, I'm gonna rip the Band-Aid off and just say it. And I really don't like saying it, but if you look behind the curtain, anybody that plays on the Who stage plays for free. Dude. And I don't really like saying that. And the other part that I've got to make sure that I've talked to somebody about, but they even have to bring their own gear. They have to bring their own gear, and they have to pay for anybody that's traveling there. Which really sort of stinks. I've got to figure out, and we can talk to Quayar about it. We can talk to somebody at Bonnaroo about it. But something is not right for a pay-to-play on the Who stage, and especially the spots that mean so much to people like the Black Keys. Black Keys would not be who they are, I don't think, if not for the Who stage in 2007.
Well, let's be clear. We don't know that they're not paid. They might be paid something, but they have to pick up a bunch of the expense. So I don't know if it's
totally. I know for a fact that DeLacy pulled out last year because she had to pay to be there.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that they would have had to pay their
– right.
They might have got a couple $100 as a fee, but the expense of travel
– was way too much for them to cover.
Yeah,
so I can attest to this a little. Our mutual friends, Repeat, played the Who stage 2 years ago. They played the Who stage a couple of days after they played the bus for us. And we helped them set up when they came in, and it very much was a DIY thing for them. They came in their van and a trailer, and that was it. They had to do everything themselves, not just for us, but for the Who stage too.
Yeah, it is it's a tough thing. But when you go to the Who stage, when you go through the list of people who were there, and back to your, I think it was a really, really good point. The people that are there, and you look back in the past, and there's 5 years ago. Oh my God. The National played the smallest stage at Bonnaroo. If you had to find your biggest miss, if you had your biggest Bonnaroo miss, who would it be?
Like, how do you mean?
Okay.
The show you didn't go to.
The show you
Matt
didn't go
Kim.
To. The show that
again?
Matt and Kim was mine.
It was this tent, right? It was this tent, and it was was it a Thursday or Friday? It was midday too. I remember being very, very hot.
Yeah,
they do a great show. It's a very lively, and he was like out in the crowd, or she was out in the crowd playing the drums.
Kim's wild, yeah,
carrying the drums. Anyway, biggest miss, Daniel. Who do you got?
The one that immediately comes to mind, I think, was 2015. I missed Tycho. Is one of my favorite like electronic acts. They played a late night show, and I was just looking at the schedule the other day, and I think I must have just crashed that night.
I know Barry's. I'm ready.
Tom Petty.
Yeah. You know why it was Tom Petty? Do you remember why it was Tom Petty?
Yeah.
I know exactly why it was Tom Petty.
I had my daughter called at like 2 in the afternoon and said, "I got us in the pit. You want to go?" And I said, "Yep." And then I sat in a chair. And I said, "I got to go home. I'm done."
He sat in a chair. That is why he missed a show.
Got comfortable.
Of an artist who you'll never see ever again.
I'll never see.
I sat in a chair.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really have a story for myself, but my best friend, Amanda, she went when the Beastie Boys played.
Yeah.
Except she fell asleep.
Yeah.
Just fell asleep.
Fell asleep with the Beastie Boys?
Yep. Fell asleep and just missed it.
They would be second or third. I saw that show, but I wasn't really into it. I didn't know them like I do now. You know what I mean? I have a bunch of those. The My Morning Jacket, who I now
look,
adore.
The biggest problem to Barry's weekend is a little thing called a chair. His entire weekend gets thrown off because of a chair.
It's partly true.
The dad sits at camp and just wants all the kids to come home safely. He will miss more shows just so he's just sitting around at camp under a blanket, curled up, all like this.
That's partly true, but I think
are the kids home? Is everybody here?
I put that to bed last year with Gucci Mane at 4:30 in the morning when we were dancing.
You were bitching about your lower back the whole time.
No, I wasn't either because I didn't feel a lot of pain at that point. It was a good night.
What about you, Brad? What'd you miss?
I have two that are very, very embarrassing. First off, I'm really upset that I missed King Princess last year, considering how much I love this album now.
Now, Brooklyn went to see that show. Can you tell us about it?
It was fun. A 45-year-old woman, I'm assuming, flashed her boobs at King Princess, and it was just like a real rainbow party.
It was
great. Yeah. There was pride stickers going around. It was so wonderful. Mm. Yeah.
So it's and I hate telling the story, but when I was I used to be before I do what I do now, which is live in the top 40 world. I had to run a rock station, and believe me, this rock station sucked. There was nothing that made any sense about it. But as a guy who thought that he knew what he was doing for a long time, I thought I had my finger on the pulse. 2010, I look at the lineup and I see this band called LCD Sound System, and I don't give a damn. I don't know who they are. I don't care. And then I started listening to them a few months later, and I was like, "Oh my God, this band's amazing! I got to see them." I go online and I find out where they're playing next. It's Madison Square Garden. It's their breakup show. I totally missed LCD Sound System for a decade, and I blew it because they were on the 20. It was a 2009 or 2010 lineup. Didn't even sniff it. Didn't care. Didn't want it. They had no interest in being there. Yeah, I missed LCD and Sound System. So when they came back in the year that, like, we all talk about being the most embarrassing lineup and crowd in Bonnaroo history, I look back at that. It's my favorite Bonnaroo because I got to be there with literally no one else.
Can I interrupt the What Podcast and the Real Rue Bus?
I mean, it
podcast?
Hasn't stopped you yet.
Can I do that? Didn't Paul McCartney play in 2013?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't.
You didn't
that.
Go.
Yeah, yeah,
didn't
yeah,
go.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I didn't see that.
You have to walk away in shame. Right,
I didn't
now.
See that.
Bye.
Yeah, I mean, I was there.
I know. Why do we let him in? Right.
So for
I was there.
So. Let me explain
let talk?
the reason why Brian
I'm just trying
Stone
to clarify,
the reason
right?
why Brian Stone lends an infamy in Camp Nut Butter is because he showed up one time and it happened to be the Friday night after McCartney, and we were just on cloud nine. Every one of us were losing our minds, and he looked at us like
overrated.
I hated the show. It was stupid. Yeah. It was every other show you've ever seen of Paul McCartney.
Yeah, he played the same show in Memphis the next week.
We looked at Brian and we said, Brian. Yeah. Did
Can you
watch
believe this? He played Live and Let Die?
I said, Brian.
He played Live and Let Die.
I said, Brian, did you see the show?
Nope, I sat at camp.
Well, to be fair, our camp is about 100 yards from the stage. So, yeah, I heard it.
Okay. All right, sounds good.
He played Live and Let Die. Can y'all believe it?
It was that and then 2009, Sorry. Al Green. I missed Al Green because I decided to chase a girl down the path, and we decided to go see Ani DeFranco instead of Al Green,
Hillary,
no
was that your idea?
RIP, we no longer.
I love you more now than I've ever loved
get
you
to see Al Green because I chose Ani DeFranco.
I'm so in
so I got a quick story to tell you about LCD Sound System. I already went through this story on our podcast a couple weeks ago. That was my favorite year of all time. I know that the
me
crowd
too.
Sucked that year,
yeah,
but it made for such a good vibe, and it was easy to get around. Like, me and my buddy Brandon went up front.
Puzzle.
That LCD sound system show was amazing. Now, my follow-up story to that was about 2 or 3 years later, we go to the Voodoo Festival in New Orleans. Pretty good city festival. We had a good time. There was a good headliners that year. It was LCD Sound System, The Killers, and The Foo Fighters. We go walking around in the French Quarter the next day after LCD Sound System show, just looking for a place to eat or whatever. I walk right by James Murphy, who was taking a stroll through there. And I passed him, and I'm like, I asked Charla and them, I'm like, should I go say something? Oh, my God, I don't want to be like a dork or whatever. But I was like, you know what? I'm never going to get this opportunity again. I'm going to go say something. I went up next to him. I was keeping it cool at first. I was like, oh, hey, James, I want to let you know that was a great show last night, man. That was really good. And he's like, oh, I appreciate it. And I was like, dude, I was at your show at Bonnaroo like 3 years ago. I was having such an awesome time. That was amazing. He was like, oh, that's your job, man.
Yeah, it opened up the sieve. Yeah. As soon as you turned the water on, everything came out, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot better than good work.
Oh, I knew that was going to come up. I knew you were going to say that. I've told this story before. It breaks my heart to tell it, but it is my Bonnaroo story that you guys, you know, talk about all the time. It's Billy Joel. It's Sunday night, and I'm dying to get out of there before Billy Joel. I just can't. I can't do it. I can't do it. And Spoon happened right before them on the wet stage.
And that's when I left, and I could have been on the stage.
Thanks, yeah. Brian. That mattered a lot to the story.
All right.
So
go ahead, Brad.
So we got lucky, and we were standing on stage for Spoon. And behind the what stage, there's this very, very long ramp that takes you back into Artist. I mean, this ramp might be 150 yards. It's really, really long. And there's one way down, and then there's a thing that separates you, and then you come up. There's nobody coming up the stage. This is after Spoon. Spoon's done. Billy Joel's next. A whole crowd of people are walking down the ramp. One figure just keeps getting closer and closer to us as it comes up the ramp. One figure, closer and closer, closer. As it gets closer, I look at my buddy Nick, and Hillary goes, that's Billy Joel. Billy Joel's walking up the ramp. Nobody's talking to Billy Joel. Nobody's stopping him. Nobody's saying hello. So I said, screw it. And I stopped Billy Joel. I was like, Billy Joel! Great work. And he said, thanks, and walked straight past me. It was in that moment I realized I've got nothing to say to Billy Joel. I've got no conversation. You're not. You're the piano man. I've got Christie Brinkley. I've got no conversation for Billy Joel other than great work.
So you guys get to live in Valhalla for like the Bonnaroo weekend back there where you are more likely.
We don't like talking about it because somebody's going to pick it and riot us. We are pretty
well, I mean,
sure
you guys are
it.
Media. Everybody's going to put two and two together. But you get to live back there where you're more likely to run into artists. So don't you have like a bullet point or two in mind for your favorite ones that you might run into?
His point
is he doesn't like Billy Joel, I think.
I actually skipped that show.
I don't like Billy Joel. It was fine. He's a fellow Met fan, but I love him, but I don't have anything to say to him. Like, you know, I have nothing to talk to him about.
But Dua Lipa, you know, that you were on cloud nine.
Well, we did more than talk.
Talk. I got you.
I will say, and this person's going to remain nameless, but we did have a band stop by and sit down with Camp Nut Butter, and decide that year to tell me, who is the biggest Alabama Shakes fan on the planet, how much the Alabama Shakes sucked, and how much they were overrated. And how irritated he was about Alabama Shakes getting any attention what you want that they should deserve.
They used to be our neighbors. You have to name them.
I cannot because they've been very, very good to me since then. I can't.
Yeah. It's an interesting – I mean, we talked before we went on air, Daniel, about the different experiences. We are definitely – we come at it a different way. We're in – VIP area backstage, I guess, and you had said you didn't know if you'd want to be in the trees where we are because you like – and I can tell you 4 years ago we would never have considered even going out into general camping.
Oh, no. That was not happening.
No, but now with all of the changes, the experiences and all of that, once we started doing this, I mean, I think we talked about it several times on the podcast – it sounds like a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot of things.
It honestly
happening
feels like,
there.
And this is a credit to the people who put this on. They have made created an event in a world for general admission that is better than anything that you can get anywhere else in the festival.
Right.
And if I had it in me to deal with bugs, heat, people, germs. Whatever.
There's no bugs. We've talked about that. We've never
seen
a bug.
We'll talk about that later.
We've never seen a bug.
Kevin's brother does that.
You guys don't know.
Kevin's brother sprays for the bugs.
All these new people, you don't know Brad as well as we do, but let him continue.
I'm too neurotic to live out there. I can't do it. The only way I can do it is in the creature comforts of being tucked away in a world that is all to our own. But with that being said, it is really phenomenal out there. And the times that I've spent... I didn't want to leave. No, granted, I did. But
I didn't want to.
He didn't want to until he did.
So, Barry, we were talking about this earlier. So the way that the festival world has gotten in the past couple of years, it's tougher to book good acts, right? It's tougher to have a lineup that's
more festivals, more demand. Yep.
But AC has done a very good job to realize that their strength is in the camps and the community. They've built those new barns, and they've had really cool people like the House of Yes out of New York come down and do really cool stuff.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, can you tell us real quick about that? Chelsea, that was one of your favorite things, right?
That was cool because they had this whole, like, New Orleans parade at the House of Yes, but it was, like, all just, like, rainbows and, like, the band was playing. I don't know. It was really cool.
Pride parade.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Now, is it the same parade that used to happen 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that used to go through the festival? They just move it to the House of Yes? Is that the
same thing? I think they move it around. I mean, it still started at the House of Yes, and then I guess, like, this big kind of party type thing. Then they just kind of just moved it around everywhere. So, I don't know. It was fun.
Let me jump in now because it seems like a natural segue, but Jeff Cuellar, I had reached out to him a week ago to see if he had some news that we could maybe announce for this podcast. They've been so good to us and so helpful. And he called this morning, actually. And it's not, you know, I knew he wasn't going to give us an artist or anything like that. But he said, to your point and to what we've been talking about, every year they address something. You know, they planted trees, they planted grass, they've redone added the bathrooms. And they, when the festival ends, they all gather and they think, what do we need to fix? And this year he told me today that the parking or the traffic, not from the freeway, but once you get past the sort of security, how do they get you to your campsite is their focus. And I actually had asked him, I said, is the delay, I figured it was the security. And he said, no, that's really not it. They can add lanes. The issue is there's ADA camping, there's VIP camping, there's group camping. But everybody comes in, you know, in the line, and then it's how they filter them out. So, I mean, to me, it's one of those things
that
doesn't sound sexy, but if you're sitting there in that car,
it's needed.
Exactly.
Is it needed? Because you're going to have to explain to me how bad it is. Because I don't know. Is that an actual issue?
Yes, it definitely was a big issue this past year. There was a huge line of people.
We were back to 80,000 people.
Yeah.
For one thing.
Well, there was a ton of people that were backed up on the interstate this past year, and we spoke to people who dropped by the bus to come speak to us that said they waited more than 6-7 hours. That had been unheard of for many years now.
Yeah.
Before we had the bus, we would drive in, it would take like an hour or two at most. But we talked to a lot of folks that got frustrated beyond belief this past year. So for Jeff to say that, that's awesome. I think that is one of the biggest needs.
Yeah.
And we look, Mitchell's here.
Mitchell's,
I think he's got a
Mitchell
word.
Mitchell has something to add.
So we have a contingency that comes from Chicago each year. And Carrie arrived at the gate. To get in line at 11:15, 11:20, and she finally got to us at around 9:30 a.m. Friday morning.
Ouch.
That happened this year at Bonnaroo.
Ouch.
Because the line was that intense.
10 hours,
roughly. And now
to go 400 yards.
Well, I'm not sure how long the line was because you know it stacks up out there on the interstate. But she got in line at around 11:15 because we saw it in the group chat, and then it was just a long list of extremities that she screamed about.
Yeah, so this is exactly what
rightfully
if I had,
so.
If I had a group of women that screamed at my extremities, if I can't understand, and these guys know much better than I do, they can only do a checklist of, you know, you fill out a form at the end of the year, right? You do, what would you like, what would you not like?
Yeah, okay.
What are those, survey? Yeah, they can do so many surveys.
Right.
But how do they actually know these things are problems? That's what I like to talk to Jeff about. If we had Jeff or somebody.
And they also, we know because they do our Moon River here and Forecastle, this is what they do. Those guys are walking around noticing where the lines are, where the bottlenecks are, the problems are. There's only so many things that they can address, like you just said, each year. But this one has jumped to the top of the line, I guess.
So if there's a thing that I've learned how much I love about Bonnaroo and festival life to begin with, just overall, when we started doing this, I didn't know how much I loved infrastructure as much as I love it. It is so fascinating to me how they can find a problem, identify it, and then figure it out either on the fly or then the next year. And so what I'd love to talk to Jeff or insert person here from whoever is working the infrastructure part of it, I'd love to know when they identified a problem, how they found it, and how are they then going to fix it. That is fascinating to me.
So yeah, and I think that's the reason I brought it up, because it's that level of detail that makes us all like this festival so much.
So in that vein, and I am very glad to hear that Jeff is making that priority, in that vein, one of the things, probably the top thing that I would say is the biggest room for improvement. And I love Bonnaroo. I'm critiquing it because I love it. But the biggest thing I could say that needs improvement is the integration with folks like Kevin from Camp Redroo, with the supergroup, with Rooshoot. We talked a little bit about the issues that they had getting the shoot through security. We've been thinking about it, and through the interaction that we have literally every day sometimes with the general community, the folks that keep coming back and back, we're keeping the conversation going probably more so, maybe even better in some cases than their official channels do. We would love to have better integration with them, to work with them on our events. We hosted Repeat 2 years ago. The folks with Redroo are having literally 1,000 or more come in for the beer exchange. And we understand AC has a ton of things that they're working on. Moon River here, they're doing that festival at the horse track in Kentucky and things like that. We realize that they have limited resources, but just having a line to talk with them so we can have infrastructure to support what we're doing, I think that is probably the biggest improvement. Because as I said before, it's not necessarily the lineup that keeps us coming back. I'm coming back to hang with Kevin. I'm coming back to hang with Mitchell. It's the community.
Well,
that's
the
biggest
aspect.
Well,
they're so dreamy. Look at them.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the things that I wanted to just interject, and again, this is not a complaint towards Bonnaroo, because you know they do put on this and they do it really well, but you know, over the years, as I've had to wait in line, and then there's been times where I've got to get in early with Bonnaroo's blessing to allow us in early, but you know, we got tracked by the local, you know, they have the local PD out that are directing traffic. So it's like their mission doesn't get all the time communicated to those that are locally helping. So, you know, that seems to be some of the problem. And again, this is not bashing them, but, you know, we've made it to all the way to the, we got told to go to the East Toll Booth. And then when we got to the East Toll Booth, we were like, oh, you got to get back in line. So then we got back in line for another couple hours to get all the way back to the West Toll Booth. So like Daniel was saying, you know, with some of these groups and stuff like that, one of the biggest things that it's good to hear that they're going to be really focusing on that. But, you know, maybe have, you know, additional, you can't cut down gates to probably make more entries, but, you know, make ones where if you're going to be in this side of the campgrounds, you're going to enter this gate. If you're going to enter on this side of the campgrounds, enter in this.
That was
it. Just makes so much more sense. And I mean, I know they do have a few other gates to do that. So, you know, I think it's just that confusion where, you know, maybe it's the local help that's pushing people over. But, you know, I think just opening up and saying, okay, you know, if you come to this side, you're going to get assigned to this side of the campgrounds. If you're coming in this side, go to this side of the campgrounds. And then maybe it would tool up that, you know, traffic that once you get past the security.
Yeah, that was my understanding. Was as he said, there's still going to be delays. They're still going to have to go through security and all that. But figuring out a way, you know, if you're ADA camping or you're group camping, to better filter it through so it goes a little bit quicker. So, I mean, to me, like I said, it's, as we've talked about so many times, all the little things add up to your overall experience.
And you know? My bet is that the 12-hour person, the person that waited 12, didn't think about that the rest of the weekend. My bad. It didn't even occur.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's a long time.
I don't know. I heard people pretty salty, and that's why they left early on Sundays, because yeah, they were just, Kevin, they did not want to get stuck in the
Have you had a year, speaking of stories, have you had a year where you just said, screw it, I got to get out of here?
You know, the last year, Tom Petty, when it rained.
I don't want to talk about you just
when it stormed in 2018, I'm one that I will, I was in the military. I've been out there. I've been in rain, sleet, snow, just about everything you get. I mean, the desert in Iraq in summertime, 125 degree heat. I've been through it all. But
is it as bad as me wearing two pair of pants right now?
It's pretty bad.
I prepared for a much colder day. I'm wearing two pair of underwear.
But being waterlogged, you know, it raining what overnight Saturday night into Sunday morning and just being waterlogged, we stuck it out throughout the day. And then when it started storming and getting really windy again that evening, thankfully my brother does live 5 minutes down the road from Bonnaroo. And we were like, you know what? We're packing up and we're just going to go to the house because, you know, there's just so much that you can do in rain, and we knew
that. What time of the day was this?
This was after the headliners on Sunday night. So we didn't stick out the party we usually have because on Sunday night we usually try to have kind of a blowout bash. You know, it's like that big send-off in Camp Redaroo because you know you're not going to see your friends again for another year. And we just couldn't do it. There's a small group of us were like, you know what, we're going to go to the hot shower and get the hot shower early.
I've told many, many people I can handle the heat. The rain at Bonnaroo is the game changer because you can't get away from it. You take all that into your tent with you and your clothes, and yeah, that's it. That's the one I worry about.
No, I would never be able to handle mud and rain. Oh, no, that would kill me.
Here's my problem with mud. Sometimes it might be shit.
yeah.
So I don't really know the difference sometimes.
No, I've never bailed out at Bonnaroo, but my first and second year, I just did not know what I was doing, and I left on Sunday. And it wasn't because I was tired of Bonnaroo or anything. I just literally did not know what I was doing. Just literally, like, was a newbie, and I was like, oh, well, oh, yeah.
We skipped Tom Petty the first
year. Yeah, the first year I was at Bonnaroo, yeah. I skipped Tom Petty just because I honestly did not know what I was doing.
No, I love Tom Petty. It was a mistake.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I know that now. But I was just like, oh, yeah, I need to get home.
I also really enjoyed how during the rain, especially, you know, we're talking about the rain in 2018, it was like the ditches that they just put hay on top of, and the hay just floats on the water, so it creates the illusion that there's actually hard ground, and just watching people go clunk through it.
See, y'all, I mean, my first one was 15 years ago or so. What they have done to that site to fix stuff like that, the one year I went, the rain created little rivulets.
Yeah, in between the what and center room.
And then as 80,000 people walked through it, over time, this little 2 foot became 18 foot.
Became Shrek Swamp.
Yeah, and then you couldn't walk between cars. I mean, it's just
But like, and I love you guys, but I can hear all of you, and I know that none of you went to Bonnaroo before 2008.
Nope.
And the rainstorm of, yeah, I think, 2003 or 4, something like that, was damn near the worst thing that's ever happened to my life. And I will never forget, and again, this is one of my stories I tell at camp every year. The first year I went to Bonnaroo, I screwed everything up. I went to the wrong entrance. I was stuck out into general admission, and I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know what camping was. I mean, if I'm neurotic now, imagine, you know, 22-year-old me. I had no idea what was happening. We got there. We were miserable immediately. We were so irritated. By that night, the rain just hammered us. And the rain, what year was it, Nate, that the rain was so? It was Dave Matthews and Friends or something, 04. It was the worst rainstorm I have ever been in my life, to the point where I literally looked next to me and saw a woman defecating into a puddle. This is why I was like, I can't do mud. I don't know the difference. It was the worst I've ever, and I said to myself, I'm never coming back. This place is disgusting. I don't want to see these people anymore. This is the opening scene of Lean on Me, where the principal's getting his head slammed into the wall. I was never coming to Bonnaroo. Yeah. And so the guy that I was with, he drove the car so fast while Dead and Friends were on, I felt as though we were running over tents. And what happened? Karma hit us. We got stuck in a mud puddle 20 yards away from the exit. 20 yards to freedom. I could get the hell out of this hellhole that was Bonnaroo. 20 yards, and we got stuck there. We fell asleep in the car. I was in the passenger seat. And I woke up to this sound, and it was a kid from Manchester in a 4x4 pulling people out of the mud.
Yeah.
I mean, when we got out of the car, I'm not kidding, our the half of the wheel was under mud. half of the wheel. It was that dug in. There was like, you paid the kid $20. He pulled you out. I've never been so happy to get out of a place in my life. And I swore on that day I would never, ever, ever walk back into Bonnaroo.
Now here you are hosting a podcast.
And now I host a podcast about Bonnaroo.
I think my second year it rained and I was in a pup tent and I had a air mattress that leaked and it was thundering and lightning and storming and I remember looking at the top of my tent thinking, I can't go anywhere. I'm either going to die or I'm not.
This isn't the Titanic, Barry. You're overstating it.
No, I'm going to get hit by lightning. I was convinced lightning was just and then I woke up in a puddle because my air mattress lost all the air and the tent leaked. So I was like, yeah, why am I doing this? I'm like, you, this is awful. So
it felt miserable. There are times terrible. In Bonnaroo where you're like, this is the worst
and I was
place
so unprepared.
In America. Why am I here?
My first campsite, I had the foresight for some reason to throw cheap sawhorses and a 2x4 piece of plywood in my truck.
Yeah, this is why he's my dad. Because he comes over and builds things like this at my house.
But that became my table, but I didn't think of shade. So I happened to have my umbrella, you know, which is always in the vehicle. And so I put the umbrella on that table and bungee corded it. And then we followed it like a sundial to find that 2 feet of shade for the rest for lunch, you know, or whatever. That was awful.
So my first
time. By the way, is that the Heaven and Ale stout?
This is. It's delicious. This is my second one. Yeah.
Yeah, Love Supreme. It's very, very delicious.
Yeah, it's good. It's I was going to go to Bloody Mary, and then I saw them pour this.
By the way, if you ever come to Bonnaroo, go to the Camp Redaroo Beer Exchange. I brought you the Odd Story, which is the right around the corner. Now you got the Heaven and Ale Love Supreme. You're doing very well.
Odd Story Lager, which is really
the Odd Story Lager, the Vienna Lager, is very good. See? Welcome to Chattanooga.
Thank you. So my first year coming to Bonnaroo, I didn't know I was coming to Bonnaroo until the month before. This was 2009. And my buddy's literally like, Mitchell, you're coming to Bonnaroo with me. We're going to give you $100. You have to pay for the rest. I was like, okay. And so I go to Bonnaroo, and I have no preparation. I literally have, I'm looking at my supplies, and I have a sleeping bag, a really shitty tent I haven't used in like 3 years. End of discussion. We're done. We're prepped.
This is like the polar opposite of where you are now.
Oh, it was bad. So, and I'm looking at space, and there's six of us total in a truck. And they go, leave your tent. One of us has a 12-person tent. It's going to be great. So everybody leaves their tent behind. I buy a bag chair, and I have my bag chair and my clothes. That's about all I've got. So we, no one thinks to bring a damn easy up. None of us. And the truck breaks down about a mile away from the entrance while we're waiting in line. And we're like, oh, all right, just grab the essentials. We're going to get the truck fixed. We'll get that back. So the girl that brought the 12-person tent, she's like, I'll grab my tent. Just picks it up out of there. None of us even flinch to think about the fact that this little tiny 4'11" girl hooked a 12-person tent on her shoulder and started walking. We just grab our supplies, which for me is my clothes, my bag chair. I got everything out of the truck. Yeah. So we walk all the way in, on foot, check in, get to campsite, start setting up, and she goes, oh, no, guys. She had left every pole at the house. And this was all six of us. Had foregone our entire camping supplies because the holy grail of a 12-person tent that she brought. And so we have an over-glorified tarp. And that's our camping situation. Our neighbors are nice enough to be like, hey, guys, you can put your chairs under our easy up. And that was after day one because I woke up in the rain and my neighbor was like, buddy, you can move your chair over here at least. Because everybody else, they went and they bought one of those really expensive tents from Bonnaroo's like emergency shop up front.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's like $120 for a 2-person sweat box. And so I was like, fuck that. I'm going to drink this weekend. I can't spend $120 on a box. So I slept in the rain in an easy in my bag chair for the first day and then under my friend's from Louisiana's easy up for the rest of it. And that was my first experience, I had so much fun I came back.
I love this story so much because the way that you've prioritized your funds. It is drinking and then,
Comfort is second because I can buy comfort by the can.
That's right. One more, and you're comfortable.
My God, Don Draper would kill for that that line. I find comfort in a can. So biggest miss, we've had the news from Jeff Cuellar and Mock Lime. All right, I've got one final question that I will ask around the table here. You know how Vegas has residency acts? And you know how, like, now I was somebody called me up the other day and they said, hey, you want to send somebody to see the Chainsmokers in the I said, no. So Vegas has residency acts. If Bonnaroo had a residency act, if Bonnaroo had one act that played every year, it was the same time every year, and you knew it was going to happen, who would it be?
Warren Haynes.
I knew it was going to be a My Morning Jacket. I knew there
he's
was going to be some morning, sort of My Morning
he's
Jacket.
He's not My
thing.
Morning Jacket.
Right, so,
but My Morning Jacket would be good. Yeah. My Morning
Chance.
Jacket or Warren?
Chance.
Yeah. I would say Chance. Or, you know, Marcus from Mumford & Sons. Okay. I feel like they kind of grew through Bonnaroo. And
I'm going to stop all of you.
I think you're all taking this the wrong way. It's not who makes sense to be there. Who would you want to be there?
Oak Grove.
Yeah, no, it's not a wish list. It's like, who do you think could hold
Jerry Garcia's ghost?
Oh,
Jerry Garcia's ghost, Mitchell said.
Like a house band.
Yeah, so
just his coat or something.
I find there's a piece of the Bonnaroo experience.
Brittany Howard is not going to be there
Shut
every
up.
Year.
Yeah, well, she's going to be here some year, if you know what I mean.
That's
He loves there's him some a, Brittany Howard. There is a thing about Bonnaroo that I have missed for damn near 5 years that doesn't happen anymore, and it really bugs me. There was a thing that in our camp that we all went to. Camp Nutbutter every single year found the same show, and we all wanted to go no matter what. We don't agree on anything. There's nothing we agree with. But Sunday morning church at 1 o'clock on the what? It happened every year. If it was Charles Bradley, it went to Mavis Staples. If it went from Mavis Staples, over and over and over, I miss church on Sunday on the wet stage. I know not many people show up. That Charles Bradley show broke my heart because Charles Bradley was my favorite album of that year. But nobody came. But if there's one piece of residency that I now that the Grand Ole Opry's there, that is your residency. Residency is Grand Ole Opry. Every year you know Grand Ole Opry's. I want Sunday church back.
For now. Yeah. I mean, I guess they could argue that the Calliope stage is it, but that's not us.
Okay. Is it? You're going to bother me here.
It's Calliope.
Please stop saying this.
It's Calliope.
What is it or what is it not? I can't figure out which one it is. Does anyone know which one it is?
It's Calliope.
I don't know that.
It's Calliope. Okay.
How do you, Charlie knows how to pronounce
you.
It. What is
All
it?
Right. All
right. It's not Calliope.
Calliope. It's Calliope.
It's Calliope.
Okay.
I'm just going to say this. By the time anybody gets there.
Okay, all I know is to move the hill.
Let it go.
By the time anybody gets there, they don't care how it's pronounced.
Yeah, that's right.
If you were to go see the weirdest stuff at Bonnaroo, go to there after 3 a.m.
Gucci Mane. It was awesome.
So I know we went through wish lists. Not Dolly. Who do you think will absolutely be there? Barry Corder.
Tame Impala.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Daniel.
Oh, same. Yeah. They're my favorite. I am.
They will be there.
Unashamedly a Kevin fanboy.
Lizzo.
What's that?
Lizzo.
Yeah.
You know anything about that?
I'll let you know.
Oh.
I'll let you know. All I know is there has not been a schedule made for Lizzo
Tool.
For 2019 or 2020.
Nate's a Tool. He wants
yeah,
to see.
Yeah, Tool. For me, you know, the 15 to 17-year-old me really wants to see Rage there this year. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would really like to see Rage Against the Machine.
Why do you think it won't happen?
I'll put every dollar that I have in my paycheck on it not happening.
Well, and that's what I'm thinking, too. I don't think it would happen, but, you know, that would be, you know, if I'm looking at the landscape of who I'd want to see. You know, the one thing I really want to see kind of, you know, I'm going into my sixth year, so I feel like I'm starting to become an old vet at this point in time. I really want to see Bonnaroo bring back the true legacy act.
Yeah. If they did that this year, who do you think it would be? I've been saying it might be Springsteen, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah.
You guys have like got Journey. To see. This is what I got to stop you at. You guys you got to start thinking about dollars. There's no possible way they're going to bring Bruce Springsteen, Tame Impala, Tool, Rage Against the Machine, on and on and on. You got to think about money here.
Yeah,
these things are not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the logistics and the financials around it. You know, I think, and that's one of the things that I remember that my fond memories of like the 15 year, you know, you go back and look at the lineup and you had a true legacy, although Billy Joel. You know, now it makes sense why Billy Joel cut his set short because he had an interaction with Brad. I mean, that makes complete sense now. Yeah.
But those kind of doofuses.
Do you know
around,
how many people when I got back to camp said, "Oh, Billy Joel's never coming back to Bonnaroo. He hates Bonnaroo because of the one interaction he had with some doper.
He was gonna do an encore, but great you stopped work. It from happening.
Killed it."
Yeah, well, the thing about Rage Against the Machine, here's the other thing that I wanted to say earlier, because by the way, I know that there was some sort of like hubbub about the Coldplay thing that I said. I'm saying that, and let me make sure that I clarify what I said about Coldplay. Coldplay's not going to do 2020 and 2021 because what I was told is that they do tours one way. They do an album, then they go silent, and then they do another album. And then they do a arena tour. They've done every tour that way since they were Coldplay. So it was based on every single thing that has happened in the past. If it was going to go forward and the person told me that it's not going to be any different than the past, you can go ahead and say it's not going to happen in the next 2 years. If they go silent this year because they just put out an album, they're going to wait for another album. That means the next album, they're going to do nothing but arenas. So, again... be that as it may, it's not a complete out. I'm sure they could do thing after thing here and there, but based on everything that I was told, that they're going to do this exact same structure that they've done every other album. Secondly, the thing about Coachella, give me an artist that has done a reunion show at Coachella that has also done it at Bonnaroo. Cool, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Found one. Now give me a headliner. Like, it's not Earth, Wind, and Fire. On the Rage Against the Machine level, when you go back and see all of the things that Coachella has done, it does not translate to anything that Bonnaroo does. So, like, when somebody says Rage Against the Machine, as much as I love that, I would kill for that. I think you have a better shot at profits against Rage than Rage Against the Machine.
So, Brad, you're being the voice of reason about our expectations.
Yeah, because every year our expectations go here, and we all get the lineup, and we're all like, womp, womp.
So what do you think would be realistic names for a legacy slot for next year?
Where did this Diana Ross thing come?
That came from Kyle, the Bonnaroo Rubin. He's a big fanboy.
Okay, because he likes it. Okay. you know, I don't know. I don't know what the legacy would be. This is not where I'm good. I don't do well with the guesses. I did a mock lineup one time like 10 years ago, and it was the worst thing that I've ever done. It was so stupid. I look like a fool.
So in terms of expectations in the lineup, me and Sarah do the same thing every year. We pay no attention to any of the rumors. Sometimes it comes across, but we wait until the lineup drops, and then somebody always does the Lord's work and sorts the lineup by genre. And we just go to genres we like and listen to shit we've never heard of, and it's just Christmas every year.
Even by mocks.
Yeah. Kikagaku Moyo actually one of the best things I found this year. We're going to go see him again Tuesday.
Really?
And they're my favorite show.
Mitchell, what was the jazz infusion band that you turned me on to? I met you there. You were in your skeleton costume last year.
Oh, God.
It was like a three-piece.
The Comet Comes. The Comet is Coming. The Comet is Coming. And the only reason we found that is because I was like, chaotic jazz. Let me hit play on that. Yeah. Psychedelic jazz and just freeform anything jazz. I'll play you a listen. That's how I found Mastodon. Because somebody told me jazz metal, and I was like, that, you just checked two boxes off.
Man, you get really high.
Let me just, you know, just to kind of piggyback on what Mitch was saying is, you know, when you run these camps, you know, we try to stay relevant with the rumors for our campers and for everybody there. And you know, a lot of it's really just to kind of try to keep the energy up and everything. But I'm much like Mitchell, you know, it's like I will not really, you know, and Daniel said it best earlier, you know, I come for the people and stay for the music. I could really
care.
You know, a lot of Bonnaroo lately, and let me preface with this. I think that the music industry is starting to change because you don't see the traditional album tour anymore. So, and, you know, like the festivals being so saturated, to me in the last couple of years, it's like, I don't even care who's coming because it's such a toss-up at this point in time. It's such a toss-up because there's no real way to put it into a formula and say, you know what, Okay, well, Tame Impala just dropped the album. But okay, so now they're going to tour. But no band's really doing that traditionally anymore. And I think you were talking about this a minute ago. Like, it just, you just don't know. And so for us, when we run these communities, it's just like, you know, we try to keep the hype up for the participation. But
well,
really,
here's what I know. I know that stadium tours, arena tours are going to pay a lot more than festivals because you can do a lot of them at once. And one person buys all of them. Right. So if you're going to do a festival, it's going to be a one off. And it's usually if you go by the money, you're going to do a festival on an off year. Not many people do a festival on an on year of an album because an on year of an album gets you all the heat. All right. So I don't know what that means for most people. I don't. But you're not getting the Eagles. You're not getting the Eagles. It's a $3.5 million show. It's not happening, you know. So it's all I know about the lineup is that every year it always underwhelms us, and we always are shocked by what is being paid to the top line. And if I can, again, going back to what I said earlier, My Chemical Romance is $1.5 million on the base. Are you going to find anyone that is going to make or break their Bonnaroo purchase on My Chemical Romance? No, I don't think
those
that you
guys
are.
Don't want to be in a field.
Plus, they're not doing many shows, right. So you better find these goth black kids. You know, we're nothing but black, and you better find them and want them to buy every one of the tickets available because they're not going to do it. And at $1.5 million, they're going to exist on the top line of your lineup. And does that sell a ticket to everybody else? It doesn't.
We're
so let me give you the example. If the lineup is Tool, Vampire Weekend, and My Chemical Romance, do you think that sells tickets? I don't think so either.
But we're all saying the same thing. Kevin is saying it. The organizers of these things have learned the experience has become as much a part of it as the lineup.
Yeah, that's right.
So they don't have to spend. They don't need to spend $3 million to get, you know, the
because the money that they're spending out in the campsites that are experiences by Hayley Williams, etc. Do you remember back in 2009, 2008, David Byrne curated an entire stage. He curated that tent, you know, and he brought St. Vincent and people that we didn't know about at the time. Andy DeFranco was on that stage, and he curated an entire stage. Now they're taking that idea and putting it out in the campsites, yeah. And to me, For the people that live in the GA world, that to me is such a better experience than if insert person here that I'm dying to see at a show.
What you guys have created.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I'm sure we were talking about the residency earlier, and I'm sure you guys saw this on the news as well, where, you know, you have these residency programs in Vegas where one of the big nightclubs just shut down because the asking price of the artist was way beyond what they could because the participation wasn't there. Do you think that these festivals start to run into that problem, that they're not going to be able to book these talents because of the asking price? And that's why Bonnaroo may be ahead of the game of creating these outside experience, which then brings it's like, you know, you look at the lineup every year and you're like, who's the headliner going to be? But really, we could probably take a poll here. You know, how many of us have really got excited about the headliners? We found more enjoyment in the mid-card.
Right. Exactly.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
And it seems like that's where maybe these festivals are starting to go because these artists asking price are so much.
Yeah, I mean, just to add on to what Kevin said, I'm not going to Bonnaroo for the music, honestly. And that's
good
the honest
you.
And honest truth.
Good
I'm going
you.
To Bonnaroo for the community. It's a vacation for me. It's a way to get away from my normal life. It's a way to get away from work. And I can't be the only person out there that's going to Bonnaroo for the community just to go to Bonnaroo for that aspect. I mean, I honestly can't be the only person who, I mean, honestly, you know, to me, and I'm going to say this in the honest to God's truth, Nickelback could play Bonnaroo, and I would still buy
Stop
a ticket
right
and go.
Now. Stop right now.
I would throw down at a terrible Nickelback concert.
I would still
concert.
Buy a ticket and go. I would still buy a ticket and go.
You just got voted off of the campsite.
Sorry, bye. Bye.
My friends make the concert. The talent on stage just adds flavor.
No, I mean, I would probably stay in the campsite all day and probably drink and get drunk and do whatever, but,
it's so funny you say that about Nickelback. I was listening to a podcast recently where somebody said the exact same thing of, you know, it's like, but the if Nickelback was booked, there'd be so many people there because of that cult.
You know what? You know, in a weird way, I can actually see Nickelback at 111. in a very strange way, that would make a lot of sense at 111 Fest. If Brian Stone talks right now, I'm going to lose my mind.
I got a microphone again. I mean, this is my gear here. I got a microphone again. Her point is that is an incredible point. Nickelback, doesn't matter, is a great point. And they have a couple of songs that are okay.
Thank God you jumped in.
I saved the show at hour and 15.
Well, first off, we thank you so much for coming down, the whole Rubus crowd and so many Bonnaroo people. It really does. And I'll say this about the Camp Redaroo before I get to Rubus, the Camp Redaroo people. First off, you guys coming means the world.
Yeah,
but
awesome. Heck yeah, guys.
But what you guys have created and what you've done out in whatever pod you find yourself in, to me, is exactly why I'm so dying to be a part of Bonnaroo every single year, even in the trees. You guys personify what the experience is. You took a blank piece of land, and then you created a world around it. And I love everything about that. Yeah, so all the credit in the world to you guys. Yeah, you smuggle what in?
He means
smuggle magic in.
He means that metaphorically.
No wonder you were there for 12 hours. Rubus, thank you so much for coming and being a part of this and supporting us the way that you have. You guys took a chance 2 years ago to do the repeat thing, and in a weird way, I feel like that repeat show at least created a community that changed the conversation. And I don't know if this podcast exists without Jared and Kristen.
Dude, they are
so great to us, and they made us feel like there was a community out there that we didn't know existed, and you guys started that. So congratulations creating something really, really well done.
You were asking who should be the house band. It's them, because they embody Bonnaroo so much.
Yeah.
Those guys are terrific. I was thinking about them after listening to your podcast with them. They're just, yes. That's the word that's them. Yes.
So
what do you want? What do you need? What can we do? Yes.
So I'm going to finish this with going around real quick. I want to find, we are in November. We've got a month and there's a month before the Hangout lineup comes out, the first week of December. Coachella will be right before that, my bet. And then Bonnaroo, first of the year. Let's go around and just tell me what to listen to between now and then. Give me an artist to listen to between now and then.
Matt Mason.
We've had him right down the road. I've had him in my building. He's terrific. I love him. Yeah.
I mentioned this on our Twitter the other day. One that I'm really into is called Fly Golden Eagle. They're kind of a psychedelic rock band out of Nashville. I think they'd be a good ad.
I've seen them.
All right, listen to the new Third Eye Blind album.
Yeah!
Man, you didn't have a Nickelback track you want to share?
No.
Third Eye Blind.
Me and Charles will go into a story about that some other time.
Okay, yeah. I'd love to hear the story, but man, I love that Smash Mouth that you're about to tell me about.
No! I've actually never listened to Nickelback.
You remind me.
Please take his mic away from him.
Hey, I'm the guy in control.
Unfortunately.
I like Michael Kiwanda. He'd be cool to see.
God, I love him so much. Yeah. I love that new project.
Labyrinth, sorry.
I got nothing. I want to hear the Blam Blams you were talking about?
The Blam Blams.
They're incredible. Okay.
That's the one I
want
to listen to.
They are literally a mix of LCD Sound System, Queen, the Beatles, the Bowie, everything. Amazing stage presence, incredible vocals, incredible musicianship. Awesome.
AC, please book them.
All right, so he's been sitting here quietly the whole time. What is your name?
Zach.
My name is Zach.
All right, give me something you're listening to right now.
I've been listening. Can you hear me on this thing?
I can hear you.
Okay, everybody can hear me? All right. I've been listening to a lot of Beck since I saw him at Shaky Knees this past. His new album, Hyperspace, is coming out next month. Actually, it's coming out this month in November in 2 weeks' time. So, and from the songs I've been hearing, Beck is eclectic. I mean, he's really... He's Beck-lectic. I mean, he's his own genre. It's going to a vaporwave sort of kind of style. So keep an eye out on Hyperspace, new album by Beck.
Beck, up and coming artist. Mitchell, you got anything? You got something for Mitchell? You got a thing for Mitchell?
Mitchell, let me see here.
What do you got? Give me something to listen to.
Well, in all honesty, I'm going to tell you to go into the past, and there's a genre called Nya Rock.
that is so incredible.
Oh my god.
It's like Zydeco jazz funk. It's, imagine like Lonnie Liston Smith with the second line.
All right, at the table, Brian and Nate, you got an idea what you're listening to right now?
Pearl Jam.
Allman Brothers.
Oh,
all
shut up.
Weekend long.
Shut up.
3 days of Allman Brothers back to back.
Have y'all heard about Blackberry Smoke?
Then a Pearl Jam cover band.
Okay, great. All right, so I'm gonna
Les Zeppelin.
How am I supposed to follow that?
Okay, you're not.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
if I got two, and she knows it. The King Princess album's the best album of the year. It's absolutely the absolute best album of the year. I'm obsessed with it. But I found a girl in England. Her name is Litany. She is followed by nobody. She has no management. She has no record label. And if I was an A&R guy tomorrow, I'd be dragging her from England to America to bring her to my boss. Her name is Litany. Listen to My Dude. Listen to her new song, which is something I don't remember. But Litany is my girl. She's unbelievable, and she sounds like every sort of like King Princess / her outfit that you can find. I'm obsessed with her. There you go. That's what I got.
There we go.
All right, Sweet. Barry, anything else?
Soja.
Thanks to the Moxie. Thanks to you guys for traveling up here. That means a bunch. That's
awesome.
Yeah,
thanks. Not only thanks to the guys, but thanks to the Moxie, at the Moxie, hashtag at the Moxie. The Moxie Chattanooga has been more than gracious than I could have ever expected. They let us drive a car into their patio.
Into their patio.
How did you even
right.
do that?
And we... I know you're going to laugh, but we need to thank Lord Taco.
Careful. Yes, Lord Taco, serious. By the way, if you want to follow Lord Taco at Russell on the Bus, is the guy that puts literally everything that we do.
Yep.
He is the guy that is the heart and soul of it. And then, of course, that guy.
Thanks to Brian. All right,
cool.
And
so one last thing. I'll make this super quick.
And Nate over here, by the way.
Yeah,
thanks
Nate.
Sorry, Daniel. Go ahead.
No, I'll make this super quick. Take under
talk
a minute.
Over each other all day.
One important thing that it's always been a mantra for us with the Roo Bus is keeping this community going, continuing to radiate positivity. I want us all to recognize that we have a lot of new people coming in every year. It is our responsibility as the upperclassmen to continue to pass on the code and radiating positivity because we want to keep this community going forever.
That is really wonderful. I was never good in high school, so I don't know if I'm the best person to do that.
No, you suck up positivity.
Yeah, I was about to say something, you know, clever, but...
Well,
today's rave babies are tomorrow's wookatry.
Hey man, can I borrow like everything?
The What Podcast, Barry Corder, Brad Steiner, Daniel from the Roo Bus, the whole Roo Bus crew. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for listening. I guess we'll see you pretty soon.
Hey! How y'all feeling? Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.